Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 133, recorded August 18th, 2011. HP explodes, and we go inside a quiet case.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TWITCH8. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton, joined actually in the flesh, which is the first time we've actually met. Ryan, I'm Patrick.
Hey, nice to meet you. How you doing?
Good, man. He's taller, actually, in real life.
Yeah, somebody in the chat room said earlier, you're taller when you're standing up, which I think applies to most people.
Well, true,
but you know, you appear taller now that I am standing up next to people.
You're like 6'2"?
Yeah, actually, exactly 6'2". Yeah. Good eye. Good
my
eye
dad was 6'3", my uncle's 6'4". I'm the short one. We normally talk about computer hardware on this program. This Week in Computer Hardware being the name. Twitch at Twitch. Dot, actually, I should say Twitch at
twit.tv. Yes.
It gets a little complicated inside my head sometimes, but we actually have some fun for you tonight. We're going to start out with news. We're going to go through to play around with... Well, actually talking about what makes a PC case quiet, thanks to the fine folks down at Antech. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we got viewer questions, which we'd love to have you send more of to Twitch at twit.tv. So a few days ago, All Things D posts the Ouchpad article.
Yeah, that's an interesting story.
Best Buy sitting on a pile of unsold HP tablets. And I'm like, this is trippy. There are a couple other stories I forwarded to you. And then this morning, HP is like, I can't say that word because it's a family-friendly program. Closing the WebOS hardware business, which apparently because they can't sell the tablets. Looking for alternative revenue models, I'd say, is a safe thing to say for the WebOS. And according to, I want to say the Wall Street Journal, amongst other places, looking to sell immediately, if not sooner, the PC hardware business.
Yeah, that kind of, I don't know. I guess I was reading some stories that said there the newest CEO that came over was really kind of forced or was focusing on workstations, server platforms, software services, those types of things.
HP chief executive Leo Apotheker, I want to say he told the Wall Street Journal, quote, being in the consumer businesses like PCs gives HP an advanced competitive advantage. And then that was like in November. And then, no, in February, he told the Wall Street Journal, being in consumer PCs gave them an immense competitive advantage. In the interview Thursday, he said, we need to sharpen our focus. And to do that, so you need to take significant action. And props to HP plans to HP explores quitting computers as profits slide, which came out
in
the Wall Street Journal an hour ago.
Never believe anything an executive says. First of all, it's disappointing. I guess one of the articles said it would be like a 12 to 18 month process before they would actually be able to sell the desktop and consumer side of things. I think the HP notebooks that I've used have been really good. Mm-hmm. I haven't used any HP desktops in a while because we tend to build things like this.
Right.
But my understanding was that the quality of their products had been pretty good. So the WebOS thing doesn't surprise me necessarily. It's surprising me on timing. That's only been a year since they made that acquisition. The desktop side does surprise me quite a bit more.
It's funny. I think I was actually talking to Jim Lauterbach, my boss over at Revision 3, who's been kind of watching HP for 1,000 years. And basically, they can make a lot more money off of services, preferably high-end stuff. And it's very funny. It very much echoes what IBM did 7 years ago when they sold the hardware business to Lenovo and concentrated on doing things like creating global networks and giant expensive security systems.
The professional market is always going to be a higher margin for things. That's why NVIDIA loves their Quadro brand. And they make almost as much money off Quadro than they do GeForce. And the number of units they actually sell is dramatically different. So it's disappointing. It was all everybody was talking about today,
right?
Because it was such a big surprise. So
pretty much came out of nowhere. what did not come out of nowhere, John Carmack talking about what this week?
So we kind of teased this last week. We were at QuakeCon a couple of weeks ago. We got to sit down with John Carmack, mm-hmm. who is the one of the co-founders of id Software and basically the creator of first-person shooters.
Right.
They created Wolfenstein and Doom and Quake.
That's
and all
Castle
the
Wolfenstein to you, sir.
Okay, yes. I'm sorry. I apologize. I don't want to shorthand anything. So talking with John is always a unique experience. It's always a very dense conversation. Mm-hmm. It's usually a one-sided one, but that's good because he has way more important things to say than I do.
Right.
And 32-minute conversation, about 6,000 words, and he speaks in a very dense manner. If you go to pcpro.com and look for the interview, it's actually really, really good. Even to sit here and listen to him talk, it might take a couple of iterations to fully understand it.
Because dense actually is a really good.
Yeah, he doesn't waste words. Everything, no. Every word he says has important context of discussion and meaning for everything. So he actually talked quite a bit about interesting things for our kind of audience. One of the things I thought was interesting, he mm-hmm. talked about the GPU race. I kind of threw him a question. It was like, look, you don't really worry about what processor a gamer has anymore. Mm-hmm. Intel, AMD, they all kind of do the same thing you want them to do. He's like, yeah, that's true. I said, what about GPUs? Are we at the point where the GPU race is over? And he said he doesn't care about the hardware of the GPU at all, mm-hmm. but he cares about the drivers.
Oh,
so he's more concerned about the software that NVIDIA or AMD are making for their graphics cards, how they interact with the operating system. And this was a problem that he reiterated several times throughout the interview, talking about how close developers on the consoles are allowed to get mm-hmm. to the metal in terms of they can very easily go in and change a memory point with one command and assembly and it's high performance throughput that way. Whereas on a PC, you got to go through DirectX, you got to go through Windows, you got to go through the AMD or NVIDIA driver. And he said that's, to do.
Consoles are more like DOS in the sense that, because the big thing about gaming on DOS, if you're old enough to remember gaming on DOS, was that each individual gaming company did things that hacked through DOS and around DOS and under DOS.
Right.
And the whole point of Microsoft starting DirectX was to basically minimize the cruft and the pain and the suffering and equalize kind of the access to the hardware.
Ease for gamers and ease developers was what it was supposed to be. But when you do that, you start to create for the people who want that hard level access to it, that mm-hmm. they really want to push performance. You think of games like Crysis and those types of things. Id Software, the id Tech engines, they're definitely on the cutting edge of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So they want hard level access to the hardware. On a PC, you really don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about he mentioned specifically in the interview that changing one texture data point was literally tens of thousands of times slower on a PC than it is on a console. Now, there are things in a PC you can do where you send out a lot of those at one time so that you negate that type of difference with bandwidth because it's a latency mm-hmm. issue versus a bandwidth issue. There's a whole lot in there about AMD and Intel and their CPU-GPU combination parts, and now he's hopeful that these combinations, these new APUs or hybrid CPUs that they're making will allow unified address space, that they will have better access to that. AMD is already kind of planning for that. We talked about that after the AMD Fusion Developer Summit, where they want unified address space between CPU and GPU and everything, which is a very nerdy technical way of saying that the programmers want access at the hardware level.
Right.
And he talks a lot about that. There's other stuff in there. He talks about how impressed he has been with Intel's integrated graphics, how that's done over the last year or so on Sandy Bridge, ray tracing, voxels, unlimited detail engines.
Voxels.
Yes, they keep cycling up. He does, interestingly, I interviewed him in 2008, so it's been 3 years now, mm-hmm. and it was on the topic specifically of ray tracing. And he mentioned that ray tracing was interesting, but he didn't think it was going to be the solution that people were going to end up using for rendering engines. Now he's kind of come full circle on that.
Right.
And he believes that at some point, ray tracing will be the best rendering option for people. We just need the performance to get there.
Did he talk any more about mobile hardware and how that kind of snuck up on him, or should I say mobile gaming?
not really in the mobile side mm-hmm. of things. We kind of asked how Android, what it would take for him for them to have the success with Android as they would with iOS, and they're just really not developing on Android yet. We talked about ARM processors and whether or not they mm-hmm. might find their way out of mobile phones and into consoles, which he thought was a distinct possibility, not this generation, but next, kind of unifying things that way. So, it's really interesting. There's a lot of great technical data in there that if you're if you don't know who John Carmack is, do a little Wikipedia on him. Read up on the success that this guy's had and how important he's been to the industry.
Do you like 3D games? Do you like first-person shooters?
Yeah, I mean,
you owe this man your thanks for sitting in dark rooms and coding.
Yes, I mean, and it's funny, after we posted our interview, I went back and started looking through a lot of old interviews with him from, you know, the 90s and stuff, and he still talks in a very similar manner, still has the same type of dense verbiage of things. It was really interesting stuff.
It's like being jabbed in the face for like 20 minutes, and I say that with respect.
But with good information. And you don't be surprised if you have to pause and look up vocabulary terms, you know, and go, oh, okay, that's what he meant by that. And there were several, you know, in our transcription, you know, people in our comments were kind of correcting us where he actually said NURB, N-U-R-B, which is a data type of some kind, and we had written down NERV. You know, it's like, oh, in context, I guess that makes more sense, so. That's definitely worth checking out.
Crysis made some changes. I want to say tessellation.
Yes.
Okay.
They released a DX11 patch.
So I'm always afraid to say tessellated without finding out I'm making an obscure like Star Trek or other reference.
I guess it was a couple of months ago now, Crysis released DX11 patch, high quality texture pack and that kind of stuff. Improved the look of the game quite a bit. Definitely was harder on graphics cards and stuff, which I think a lot of enthusiasts wanted. Right. You know, they wanted that Crysis feel to a game that where, you know, the old cliche, the meme that became.
I want this Crysis game to run slow on my machine and force me to update my hardware.
More or less. So another great review site, Tech Report, did a story where they looked at, they saw that when the DX11 patch was applied to Crysis 2, the performance on AMD cards went down significantly more than it did on NVIDIA.
Really?
They wanted to know why.
Okay.
Now, NVIDIA is known to have better tessellation performance than AMD. It's not a debate. They just have they put more of the die space on it.
But before I see it swing by on the chat room down there, I should say, what's a tessellation?
Tessellation is procedurally generating geometry based on an algorithm or a texture map of some kind. So basically, if you have an object that is round, you can tessellate it and make it appear much smoother without a lot of the burden of doing traditional geometry processing on your GPU. So it's actually pretty good for that. But what they found in Crysis 2 is that there was tessellation being applied in places where there should not have been tessellation being applied.
Really? Is that a hack or an accident?
So it's one of two things.
Okay.
Lazy programming, because we're talking about the water in the game is tessellated now, right? Great. Fantastic. But if you look on the screenshot here, what you'll see is this pink field that you're looking at is actually a terrain of tessellated water that is being processed by the GPU, even though it's never being displayed. You can see the level we're on here is a completely city-based level.
Right.
But they are continuing to render heavily tessellated water underneath that.
Which is just...
For no reason.
Right. I'm going to say
no reason for it. It's really kind of odd. If you also they have like jersey barriers, you know, the concrete construction barriers that are like super detailed with tessellation, but they're not that important to the game, right? And you can do that with maybe 10,000 instead of 100,000 triangles, right? And you get so the theory is they're either lazy programming, which is possible,
or NVIDIA paid them money to make it more complicated,
or NVIDIA said, you know, if you just accidentally left that in there, we'd be cool with that, which is kind of detrimental to, even if you're an NVIDIA user, you're losing performance because of it. you're not losing as much as the AMD guys, but you're still losing performance. So I want to lean towards it's lazy programming. Because I hate imagining that our industry is so full of the conspiracy theory that they'd be willing to sacrifice the overall game quality so that they were 20% worse while AMD was 30% worse.
I find that difficult to believe, and I look forward to the rapid correction of this programming error by Crysis that will improve gaming performance for both AMD and NVIDIA users.
Exactly. So we do have one more story to talk about. Intel rejects the 50% Ultrabook GPU price cuts that the manufacturers demanded.
So,
is this a surprise to anybody?
Yeah, I mean, if you've been following along with us, we've since CES, basically the idea is Ultrabooks are going to be lighter and slim. They're basically, you know, Intel wants to create a branded experience that basically is going to kick on the MacBook Air, which is super thin, super light, great battery life, excellent power. And they came out with a parts list, and all the manufacturers went, are you high? This is going to cost us $1,500 to build an entry-level model with this. You can't do this. You have to lower the cost. And people started looking at the lowered cost, and they were like, okay, $750. They're like, no, you need to have the cost. And Intel's basically like, no.
What's questionable to me is if they can sell a MacBook Air for $999, why is it that a PC vendor can't come close to that?
Well, it's an interesting question, right? Because partially, you know, it's always hard when you're looking at a new spec. You've got it, you know, versus an existing supplier. What is the rate at which, you know what I mean? Because on one hand, I think there's absolutely no fear in Intel land, whichever campus you're on, that Apple's suddenly going to go to AMD. Not to take anything away from AMD's processors, but there's just no... Apple doesn't hit a price point where they can get an advantage from an AMD processor, and especially in terms of looking at power performance, integrated some of the integrated graphics stuff. So, you know, on one hand, you wouldn't think that Intel would be giving Apple special price breaks, but on the other hand, Apple is buying huge volumes. So I wonder if they're getting, and they prepay,
which is where they can get a bulk discount, right? That's one of those benefits of having that huge cash reserve that they do.
So, you know, there's possibilities that maybe Apple has some pricing advantages. There's possibilities also that Apple has advantages in terms of the fact that Apple basically owns a bunch of factories in China.
Right.
Apple's business is lucrative. Apple spends money. We talked about this, I think, last week, where Apple decides they want a technology, and the manufacturing companies go, that doesn't exist yet, and Apple has so much money in the bank, they can help do capital investments to basically outfit these.
Create that for me, please.
Right. And then these businesses can then turn around and they get Apple's business and everybody's happy and lots of money is made. So there are definitely competitive. Apple's gotten to the point where they're selling so much hardware they have competitive advantages. I still wonder how much of this is vendor whining and how much of this is Intel, you know, whining, and where in the middle of this lies the truth.
Yeah, I don't know where the truth is. Right. I don't think any of us will know until later when all these stories break. But I do know that I want that in a Windows environment.
Well, you can have a Windows environment running on that.
I don't want to run Parallels on anything.
You don't have to run Parallels. I'll explain it later. We are going to come back in a moment to talk about quieting down your PC, which is another thing we've been interested in lately. And we're going to talk about this case, which somebody said it sounded like a salesman earlier. So I just want to say, you know, you're not just going to get the Antec P180 case, but you're also going to get a copy of a vintage classic on VHS. Solve your computer problems with Leo Laporte and Patrick Norton, who still had hair at this point. We should thank
our sponsor. I brought those up, especially for those types of memories, you know?
I really did have hair back then.
Yeah. What year was that, you think?
2002?
There's no date on the outside of the box, and it's a still sealed copy, so I didn't want to rip it open.
Well, you thank one of our sponsors.
I will do that.
I will preserve the...
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. They have an easy-to-use user interface for creating and managing a website or blog. Squarespace is optimized for both beginners and CSS experts. If you want to get behind the website and get into the code, you can absolutely do that. They let you have that flexibility. But if you don't, there's lots of templates for you to go through, and you can start with those and modify to your whim. Definitely go to Squarespace.com website, look through their gallery collection of sites. There's a lot of good-looking stuff there. They have iPhone and iPad apps for updating your blog on the go. They do have online resources and a special support team for personal help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I should say. It is an all-inclusive service that includes modules you need to build your website, like a blog module, form builder, Flickr photo display, Twitter widgets, all of the social networking things you need, social media buttons, Google Maps, all that type of stuff. They also have really good website tracking, so you know how many times your site is viewed, and a built-in search engine optimizer. Permission access handling is useful if you want to have multiple people running a website so you guys can each edit your own blogs, but not everybody else's. That's good to know if you want to start a website, maybe on computer hardware. Maybe you want to follow the death of WebOS. You can do that with a free trial from Squarespace.com for all your website needs. Build it, host it, and update it anytime. For your free trial, go to Squarespace.com. Sign up for a free account. There is no credit card needed. That's one of the cool parts. Just try it out. Start building your website. Then, if you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TWICH8, TWICH8, and get 10% off for 6 months. That's Squarespace.com, offer code TWICH8. We thank them for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware.
What's really tripping me out right now is looking at
Q Publishing site where they still sell Adobe Reader versions of these books from like 9 years ago.
For $16.
$16 for the Adobe Reader format.
I bet that would be humorous to read.
I bet that would be humorous to
read. I don't know if it's $16 humorous, but it's probably pretty humorous to read. Interesting.
Wow, that was a long time ago. Hey.
So let's talk about Quiet Hardware.
Quiet Hardware is really nice. Quiet Hardware and PCs used to be an oxymoron, especially at the performance level. You know,
right.
Seven fans, you know, hosing everything down. We can probably start with one of the biggest noise generators. I have here an Intel Core i5. It's really strange for me to actually buy a retail box of something because I'm usually buying the OEM boxes.
Sure.
But, one, I wanted an excuse for a segment later on to talk about Quiet CPU coolers, and B, even
now we have a stock one to compare to.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because, you know, the stock cooler designs have not changed much in the last 2 or 3 years. So there, if you've never assembled a PC, and if you haven't, I feel pain for you because it's a wonderful, nurturing experience. But the nice thing about the way they mount the chips now is you put a huge heat sink on top of them to dissipate the heat coming out of the cores, and then they put this very tiny fan that is incredibly loud on top, at least by comparison to some of the other coolers we've talked about.
Yeah. I like to show the thinness of it, though. Right? I mean, these do the job, but not very well.
Right.
Right? The Intel's purpose here is let's make a heatsink that's adequate, that's going to do the job we need it to do, but be cheap for us to build,
right,
easy to install, et cetera, et cetera. And they do that. And if you don't have noise concerns, those heat sinks work. We use a couple of those on test beds and stuff where it's not an issue, right?
Right.
But, I mean, you look at the size of that heat sink, and you look at some of the retail heat sinks that have been reviewed recently.
Hand me the box really quickly. Like, most of the high-end, especially the low-power ones, are going to be about, well, this heat sink plus this box, and maybe a little bit of this box, too.
Yeah, yeah.
By comparison.
You do like a Thermalright 120 or something,
yeah,
like that. Yeah, they're going to be larger. But this is actually, I'll tell you what, I'll give them one thing. This is very helpful if you're building a small form factor home theater, mm-hmm, PC, right? Because it will do the job, and it's, mm-hmm, pretty low, you know, profile on that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's kind of funny because when you start looking at aftermarket heat sinks, you basically start looking at exercises in how to dissipate heat. So they still usually have, it's kind of funny, you can just see in the very center of that, it's got this pre-assembled or this sort
the
of
thermal interface.
Yeah,
stuff.
The thermal interface is kind of pre-applied there inside of there, but you see the big copper circle in the middle of that, so they put an expensive piece of copper in the middle because copper conducts heat incredibly well,
right,
and then they wrap it with aluminum, which doesn't conduct heat as well as copper, but is a heck of a lot less expensive, and then they make those huge, basically, you know, blades that help radiate, increase the surface,
yeah,
area, and draw the heat out. And then when we're talking about retail ones, they have huge extrusions, usually made of copper, sometimes
copper
made of
all
aluminum.
The way through.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, or more copper than just that. So that's – and all of that to cool that little tiny surface.
That little tiny surface, right, which is probably pulling, what, 50 watts on this one, 70 watts on this one?
Might be
95 watts.
95 watt, yeah. So this is a 2300.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. They do go down. I mean, one of the things you can do is if you're looking to build a quiet machine, I could point that out too, is if you look for the parts that are rated at lower watt specage, so they have 65-watt parts, and I think they even have 45-watt parts.
You're
going to pay more for them.
I meant to buy a 45-watt part, but this was on sale. Matter of fact, so were 3-terabyte hard drives for $125. So now I'm upgrading the NAS box that this is going to turn into from what was going to be 4 terabytes of storage to 12 terabytes of storage. So that was an expensive day. I'd like to thank a friend of mine for telling me they were on sale before I got out of the store.
So there's your CPU. Now we're going to go into the case, I guess. This is an Antec Mini 180, I believe, is the actual name of this. Mini 180. The P180 is a very, very popular, mm-hmm, computer chassis. It's been around for a long time. They've made some updates to it. This is kind of the smaller version. Still fits a full-size ATX case, but
we were talking, you know, we've talked a little bit about expensive cases versus cheap cases, and I love, I didn't realize, do we have a camera directly above this?
We have one right behind us right
here.
Oh,
this is exciting.
Yeah.
So, as you start getting into newer and more expensive case designs, a couple things. One, there's a,
this is better than the screensaver, isn't it? We got a camera above you. We're looking right into the thing. Okay, go ahead. It's so cool, isn't it?
We got your boxes out here with your VHS tape.
I saw that with the tape that Patrick and I did. Isn't that great?
Look.
You were so cute.
You still wore loud shirts.
Look at all the hair he had. Oh my gosh. Look at that.
What I want to know is.
Holy cow.
No. The best part is look up, Leo.
VHS.
Look up, Leo. Your hairline is pretty much the same, and I hate you for that.
Yeah, but I'm a lot fatter. So anyway, I just wanted to say welcome to the studio. And isn't it, well, you've been here three times now. But isn't this great that we can shoot
this is
now?
Awesome.
We can see stuff. We can see the products. It's fantastic.
You know, fish and twist soaps start to stink after 3 days.
Not you.
But it's kind of funny. The Antec was one of the first companies to really step up, listen to people that were building silent PCs, and start to do some really smart things. From a thermal standpoint, you can see a huge barrier down here on the bottom. And the idea is that you actually isolate all of the heat from the power supply unit and basically contain the fan of the power supply unit. And that also helps you contain noise. But the idea is that you're going to basically you put this big physical barrier between all of the heat that's going to go here, your 450-watt, your 850-watt, your 14,000-watt power supply unit.
Right.
And it's kind of funny. You can just see it down here on the bottom of the case, but it's going to be drawing air through
the bottom.
For the bottom of the case, from the front of the case and the slots over here, directing it out the back, and then using this big plate, this big full plate here to isolate the heat from that assembly.
On this case, it's interesting because this is adjustable. It's a little dark here, but you can see this. We can slide this out. This lets you know how much room you need for cables if you need to bring cables up through here. If you don't, you can close that off, keep the airflow and heat contained, and do the cables through the back there as well.
So
one of the things I do want to point out on this door, you can't really tell in here because it's kind of a plastic and an aluminum right here. In between these is a layer of very, very, very dense compressed plastic that is used as a sound dampener.
Right.
Some of the other cases, it's actually kind of external here, and you can see it. You know, that foam type of sound dampener. It's the same idea, only in this case, it's kind of they wanted to make it thinner.
So which makes sense.
You can feel it. The door feels heavy. It feels kind of sturdy, even though it's made out of plastic, essentially.
It's very heavy plastic. Well, it's also funny because one of the nice things about using plastic, and you notice they basically they basically make this a very rigid structure that helps reduce vibration. They make it a heavy structure by bonding the plastic in there. It's basically like the damping stuff you see people selling at car stereo shops, where you're gonna roll on this layer of basically asphalt roofing material that creates mass on the part and reduces vibration and isolates, more importantly, vibration and noise from.
this strap here keeps the metal from contacting that and kind of vibrating on it as well. I mean, it's. What makes a case quiet, because you think its case is just a piece of metal or it's just a piece of plastic, right? What can it really do to make a difference? It's these little things, right? The sound damping on that, on the back panel, the rubber, that so metal's never touching metal.
Right. I was going to say, one, I do love the fact that they've got the rings in here to help you pull the drive cages out. A lot of times the rubber ISO mounts that they put in for hard drives are made out of hard rubber, which is the worst possible thing. The softer these are, the more likely they are to actually isolate the vibrations from the hard drive, from the case, and therefore from the rest of the room. Because the worst case scenario is you get like a hard drive that basically is doing a lot of head movement and is loud when it's right. Most of them aren't anymore, but they still happen. So the worst case is to have your big, heavy, hard drive, which is spinning and the drive head's moving, attached to a piece of steel that is attached to the case with a big aluminum side panel that acts as a drum head, or actually, in this case, actually acts as a speaker.
Yep.
So they start by, first of all, isolating the hard drive from the drive cage with these very soft rubber ISO mounts. The drive cages themselves are actually held in on plastic trays, which, you know, are probably not the most ridiculous over-the-top thing out there, but do the job pretty effectively.
And it seems to fit pretty snugly.
Yes.
Right? You don't, it does, it's, and I like the little clip there on the hook as well. You don't have to worry about that kind of rattling around. Thumb screws for all that type of stuff. And, you know, this is another feature up here, if I don't block the camera. The larger the fan, the slower it can spin, the quieter it can be. Those aren't necessarily the case. But
generally speaking, the large fan can still move large volumes of air without basically making high-speed noises. You know, basically fans using ball bearings, fans with advanced blade designs. I was holding up some of those.
Even got the feet on the bottom are even kind of robust.
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about that. You actually, you know, one last thing we should point out is also the way the case is designed with the door on the front. The door, again, is very heavy. It's kind of loaded. And with the door on the case shut here, it forces this to pull air through the vents on the side and a little bit over here. And the idea is that you don't have a big fan sticking out the front of this. Like, I have an Antec, or I'm going to say a 900,
right,
which has, like, gigantic fans with blue LEDs that spin fast. And it has, like, nine drive bays on the front, but it also has, like, nine fans. And I keep walking by that and thinking, it's going to be quieter soon.
Yes, that would be a plus. I mean, so, yeah, this case, I don't even think this case is specifically meant for quiet cooling, but it's a good example of kind of a high-quality build and what it takes to be quiet. Now, that doesn't appear that it would be a very quiet case.
No, this is actually a traditional, low-cost...
this out of the way so you can set that up here?
Absolutely, PC case. And you notice basically it's a single layer. And don't get me wrong, if you've got this in a closet, if you've got this, you know, far away from where you're working, you're not going to notice it. But basically, you've got a big, flat piece of steel that works really well as a drum head. And actually, if you can pick that up for a second.
Sure.
This was basically designed to go into server rooms as part of a VoIP system.
Gotcha.
And look at that. You have a big open... Sorry, it's got bounced around a little bit in the truck. But notice you've got steel clamped to steel for the hard drive bays. On the upside, the heat is going out the top of the machine because they basically have the... power supply unit is at the top of the machine, so it's pulling all the hot air out. So this actually has a very nice airflow pattern in terms of cooling because the air is coming in through vents down here. It's getting pulled across the case and out the back.
That's still an interesting debate. Power supply top mount, power supply bottom mount.
Right.
I would say most new cases are coming out with bottom mount.
Right. But do they have that sort of wall in between
almost
the bottom mount?
Almost all of them do.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should.
They should. You know, Intel power supply, again, they're not trying to be particularly silent on this one. But you also notice how it's kind of funny because there's a cup here that's designed to help move cool air over the fan or move air off the fan out of the machine. And it basically means you have the fan noise directed out the side of the machine where you can make sure you fully access it. So make sure no one.
It looks like a speaker.
Yes.
Like this, actually, which is nice.
And you know what? Whatever fan noise doesn't come straight out that hole will probably be picked up and vibrated through the side of this case.
I mean, this is one of those. The case is almost one of those cases. Well, it's one of those cases. It's one of those components of a system build that is, if you want a really nice one and you want quiet and you want high quality and you want no sharp edges,
right,
you can absolutely do that. But you're going to have to pay for it.
Right.
If you want cheap and you don't care about vibrations, you don't care about noise, you don't care about it being flimsy,
right,
you can buy a $30 case and you can get a system built cheaper.
And
you know,
it's a place to cut corners. It's a place to save money.
One last thing I was going to show off, because they handed us this one first, too. That motherboard won't fit in there, I don't think.
I was going to say, this motherboard is probably the size of that
case. This is the first one they gave me, and I was like, let me double check and make sure we're going to have a mini ITX motherboard. So this is a micro ATX.
Right.
H67M motherboard.
I was going to say, we should also point out, ironically, micro ATX motherboards are larger than mini ATX motherboards.
Well, that's mini ITX.
Okay.
So that's and it's
not
really
ATX, pardon me.
This is an interesting case from Antec that they handed to us today as well, when they thought we were building an ITX basis. And this is the, let me cheat, ISK100.
I could have brought up an ATOM motherboard.
We could do that. So, I mean, this is about as small a case as you can get that is still considered DIY.
Right.
When you get much smaller than this, you're getting self-contained boxes like the ones from Zotac or Sapphire, whoever, that make those cell phones. So this is what's interesting. You've got this here.
Is that a 90-watt power supply?
80 watts. So that can go the ultra mobile Sandy Bridge parts can actually use those. So you can put a mini ITX. They do make mini ITX H67 boards. I have actually one from Zotac. Also kind of cool about this, so you've got your normal tangle of stuff you have to deal with. It's kind of hard to tell in this angle, but if you notice this can fit two 2.5-inch hard drives.
Really?
But they're lowered, and so they sit behind the motherboard.
Oh, interesting.
So that's actually kind of interesting. You can obviously access them on this side if you need to as well, slide them in that way. But, I mean, this is about as small as you're going to get in terms of being able to build your own system.
That's pretty small.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's obvious. I mean, just for scale, let me put a standard iPhone next to this case. It's not a big case.
So that's pretty cool. And it's, you know, again, one of the issues you could run into when you got smaller systems, if you do have to have smaller fans, they can be louder. But when we're talking about an 80-watt power supply,
you're not generating much heat.
Yeah, you're not. Well, they're not really worried about a whole lot of that. So that was cool as well.
And they put the power supply on the top.
Yes, they did, actually. But this one will generate way less heat than the ones we were looking at here.
Yeah, I was also kind of... I tweeted Brian earlier today as I was in Central Computers, kind of legendary Northern California Bay Area chain of computer stores, and I was like, So, like, the ridiculous over-the-top gamer high current power supply.
Not super over-the-top. It's 520 watts.
Right.
The branding is.
Yeah, the branding. They had, like, 850 watt power supplies, but it's, you know, it's 80-plus bronze, thermally efficient, which they put on the top so as to not confuse gamers, right? So
don't worry about that if you're a gamer.
it's green, but you don't care because you're looking for the high current, but... I bought this over the nominally more green power supply because it's got a 135-millimeter fan instead of a 120-millimeter fan. And they're claiming a considerably lower noise threshold on this one.
Okay.
So like 1,700 RPM, 30 dBA, 1,300 RPM, 23 dBA. And the other ones, they were claiming around 40 to 45 decibels at full
tilt. It's taken longer than I would have liked, but power supply vendors are finally realizing that people want quiet units. This one actually did turn out to be very quiet. Lee, our power supply guy, did a review of this and came up. It got the gold award and all that kind of stuff. It's more about having enough steppings in your power supply fan speeds so that it's not either off or on.
Right.
Lots of progression.
Jet fan or quiet.
So on a 500-watt unit, if you're using 200 watts, run at this speed, 300, 400, 500, or if you can be more granular than that, the better.
Now, my $64,000 question is, do I keep that or do I wait a couple days for a fanless power supply to come in?
So we actually have a review pending of a 500-watt – is it 500 or 400-watt fanless power supply from a company called Kingwind that I think has actually done very well.
That actually, I want to say Hard OCP might have looked at that and freaked out over it. To use a highly technical
positive
term.
Or negative? Positive. I mean, that's one of those things with, it's kind of niche. Not many people need it, but if you're looking for ultra quiet,
right?
No fans is better than fans.
It's kind of funny. This machine's, I'm going to take all of the Render Monster 3000 stuff out of, you know, basically build that into a quiet home server to sit in a corner of my house.
Right.
And I'm actually going to have a basement in a few weeks, which I'm very excited about because I can put the computer in the very cool basement.
How many people in California have basements?
It's an earthquake thing.
Yeah.
I'll put a cage around it.
We love our basements back home, so I wouldn't have anywhere to put all my junk.
Don't get me started. We should take a moment to thank, actually, one of our sponsors before we talk. Actually, we got some viewer questions coming up.
We do. We still have – we got a handful of viewer questions. I had a little bit of a focus on quiet still. I figured that was the theme of the day, so we'll go with that as well. But we are going to mention that this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix will stream thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly, which means you save time, money, and hassle. No more going to the video store to return your Solve Your Computer Problems VHS tape, which is really nice.
I was watching Downton Abbey, a BBC series, last night for the second time on Netflix, and I got to watch it over and over again, the episode I was watching, without spending extra money, without any late fees or
that'll help.
Due date violations.
Absolutely. There are lots of easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch it on your Mac or PC or iPad with the new iPad app. You can watch it on your iPhone and some Android phones, too. Gaming consoles work. Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, Nintendo Wii, they let you watch Netflix directly on your TV as well. Even if you're not a gamer, they have set-top boxes for you. Apple TV works. Roku box works. They're expensive, easy to use. Obviously, that's something to look into. So with Netflix, you can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of those devices. And you can begin watching a movie or show on one device and finish on a different one, which is good if you're maybe going from your laptop to your Apple TV at home, something like that as well. Whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies or TV shows as you want, anytime you want, or in Patrick's case, as many times as you want. Right?
I'm a critical viewer. Sometimes I like to get a second view in on
obviously
there.
You do. And you can cancel at any time. So try Netflix today for 30 days free. Go to netflix.com/twit. Be sure to use that URL when you sign up for your free trial, please. That helps us. netflix.com/twit. We thank Netflix for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware and hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix.
Twitch at twit.tv is the email address. We love to get your email questions. You can also find at Ryan Trout on the Twitter, at Patrick Norton on the Twitter. And we got a suggestion for quiet from Felix. He says the NZXT H2 is really nice. Silent fans and a built-in fan controller. That basically means you can, you know, either you used to like hack 12-volt fans to 5 volts or 5-volt fans to 3 volts, or you would put a little potentiometer in there so you could turn the voltage level down and slow the fan speed, therefore make it quieter. And you would basically play a game where how low can I get the fan without frying my computer?
it's like a light dimmer for your fan speeds now. Right?
I like that thought.
We're good.
So the NZX TH2 is really nice. Silent fans and a built-in fan controller. For GPUs, the Asus DCU2 have the GTX 580, and it is dead silent even at full load. These cards are also relatively cheap in Sweden. When idling, I cannot hear my computer at all. And I'm into the whole idea of not hearing my computer.
GPU fans, non-stock, are one of the best ways that you can improve your noise performance of your PC. NVIDIA and AMD make their cards so that they have no possibility of frying.
Right.
But they also, you know, they're worried about price because $499 is a lot for a graphics card.
Right.
So, but when you look at ASUS, you look at EVGA and some other companies that are doing aftermarket coolers, multiple fans. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not as worried about maybe the shape and size of them if they look as sexy as the reference design. So that's one way to get it. And if he's saying they're cheap in Sweden, that means they're probably pretty close to the reference costs as well.
Reference costs are good.
We have an email from Joseph about moving from a TV as his display to an iFinity as his display. He asks or says, longtime fan, the show, plus the fact that I'm no longer a broke college kid, inspired me to go back to building PCs and leaving the console world. I built a great computer back in March, i5-2500K, 8 gigs of memory, 6850. However, I was using a 42-inch Panasonic plasma. It was great for watching movies and the like. Not bad for gaming.
But you have to wear your sunglasses if you're watching for too long.
But it's slowly driven me and my eyes crazy while trying to read text and work.
That is pretty normal.
Even at 1080p resolutions, that's hard to do on 42-inch.
If it was display. Going to be 12 feet away from you, 30 feet away from you, I think it would
work.
Kind
of like these screens are here in front of us.
4 feet away from you on a desk, 1080p that's resolution tough. Is not – it's acceptable. You can deal with it on a 24-inch monitor because you have no choice. But on a 32 or 40-inch monitor, it can be unpleasant, especially over time.
So as a result, he says, I want to go to iFinity, and I'm unwilling – because he's unwilling to lose any screen real estate, he settled on 3 Dell U2412s. They have a native resolution of 1980 by 1200 for a total resolution of 5940 by 1200. I've never had an issue with my 6850 before. He could always just throw it on the highest settings in games and be done with it. However, with this high resolution, with the 6950, has the 6950 finally met its match? Will you have to adjust any of the settings? And I think that's going to be a definite.
Yeah.
So, and actually, there's a little bit of difference here. He talks about a 6850 in the description and a 6950 later, so I'm not sure. And that actually is a pretty big difference in performance.
Right.
The 6850 and 6950 have a pretty big gap in performance. Even with the 6950, I'm telling you right now that you're probably not going to be able to play the games at the same quality settings. You're definitely not going to be able to play the games at the same quality settings. I mean,
how do you feel about 480p?
So, I mean, I wouldn't do 480p. I would keep that native resolution. But go from extreme to high or high to medium. Play with your anti-aliasing settings. That's probably what's going to affect performance the most dramatically because that's very kind of CPU or memory intensive, rather. For some games, if you use FRAPS or if you use any kind of performance metric while you're playing games, if you were gaming at 120, 130 frames per second, like maybe you could do on Left 4 Dead 2. That's pretty common, older engine, that type of thing. Then you might be able to get away with it at the same quality settings, and now you're running it 60 frames per second.
That is unacceptable. I will get fragged.
I would say be prepared to lower your performance settings down some, your quality settings down some. But you can always crossfire it. Right? That's the benefit of this configuration. You don't need to buy anything now. You don't need to jump in and spend your money until you know you absolutely have to. And that's what we want. The scalability and flexibility of PC gaming is shown there, right? So enjoy your 3 Dell 24-inch 1080 or 1200p displays. See what you get. If you're not happy with the quality you got, you can make that investment now that you're no longer a poor college student.
Yay!
That's always nice.
And, it's been amazing. We've we've beaten it with a hammer. It's basically Crossfire is much – you're getting more oomph for your dollar. You're basically doubling your performance, actually, yep. whether you're using ATI or NVIDIA technology in that case.
Yep.
John wants to use a really old case, Patrick's favorite. I was wondering – and it was written here. I don't really refer to myself in the third person.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you've heard of anyone putting modern hardware such as an ATX motherboard and power supply into a vintage case like that of an old IBM XT or AT. I'm thinking of doing this for fun. I was wondering, is there any information regarding someone who has done it before? Love the show. Thank you, John. It's kind of funny. I'm going to look something up really quickly.
Okay.
Puget Systems used to offer a really cool piece of hardware, and I don't know who made it, but it was essentially do we have a PC case? Essentially, it was the
bring this up?
Yeah, I'm going to grab that really quickly. Where, first of all, yes, people do it all the time. People put PCs in strange things, computer drawers, underneath desks, inside of aquariums.
Right.
But most say Puget Systems offered a really cool board that was essentially the bottom that you would attach the motherboard to and the back riser with the card slots. I've also actually cut apart an old PC case to basically give myself a big L of steel that I could mount the cards on. The truth is if you're not too crazy with cabling or if you figure out a way to sort of tie the cabling into the box you're building it into, you can leave the cards loose. A lot of people actually like to use hot glue gun glue to hold them in place so they don't fall out when you're moving them. But yeah, actually, I've seen people put Windows PC parts inside of vintage Apple cases, new Apple cases.
Be prepared for little modifications and those types of things.
How handy are you? How comfortable are you with walking into the gigantic, crazy hardware section of your local hardware store and you know, and getting some obscure parts? Like, you know, are you comfortable tracking it? Yeah, do you have a Dremel?
Uh-huh.
Do you know what an elevator bolt is?
Right.
Are you comfortable with epoxy? And if the answer to any of these questions is no, then you ask yourself, am I willing to experiment with an old IBM XT case and possibly glue my fingers to it in the process of learning this? And if you could say yes, you are on your way to being a computer modder. And just search for computer mods, case mods. Just search for case mods and start looking at what people did to make these amazing, insane, over-the-top sculptures out of computers. And then take the tiny nuggets from these incredible creations and start building, you know, your case in there. The answer is you can absolutely totally do it. You just have to be patient and figure out where to put everything. So
very cool. One more email from Michael about an SSD for a laptop. He wants an SSD for laptop. I think all of us do. And all of us should, I think. That should be part of it.
Soon.
Says, I'm about to make the plunge into getting a new laptop. He's been using a Toshiba Satellite Pro L300 for about 4 more years now. He's getting pretty good at bringing it to its knees with the web development he's doing. I'm looking to probably looking at the Lenovo ThinkPad 420 and 420S because of the good Linux support,
cool,
build quality, etc. Here's my question. Are there some generally accepted product lines I should be looking into getting for a fast SSD for laptop use? The laptop I'm looking at has a QM67 chipset. I can survive off a small one, say 60 to 80 gigs would be plenty, but it has to be fast for database I/O when I'm coding. My coworker recently got an Intel SSD, which evidently has an outstanding firmware issue that caused it to identify as an 8-megabyte read-only drive and lose all of his data.
Ow.
Yikes. I'd like to avoid that if possible.
Okay.
That's always good.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. SSDs are so new and so exciting and so fun and so pushing barriers really quickly and are so based on memory technology and unbelievably amazing algorithms that allow you to do basically what would have been impossible using, you know, read-write memory just a couple of years ago, that we're running into oopsies where things like your entire data disappears.
So that specific issue, I should point out, the Intel 8-megabyte bug, as they're calling it, was actually patched. They put out a firmware yesterday, I guess. So if you want to buy an Intel 320, you should be more confident than ever, which is – it affected a very small percentage of people, but it doesn't really matter as long as it doesn't affect you.
Right. It's also like – SSD fails because we're talking about SSD fails because they're so new and so exciting, and everybody gets an SSD goes like, you need an SSD. Have you gotten an SSD yet? You there. Go buy an SSD. We need SSD. You know what I mean? Because like you and I are both like, you know what? You use a notebook with an SSD, you're never going to go back to a hard disk drive.
It's true.
So they get big – anytime there's a major glitch or even a minor glitch, it gets big coverage.
Yes, and I think – because you're talking about these people are bleeding edge enthusiasts that are using them, and so they're also the most vocal people out there.
Right.
But I think we have come across a delayed kind of adolescence of SSDs, I guess is what I'll say, where there are some growing pains that are going on right now. And I think it's only really affecting kind of the fastest SATA 6 gigabit per second controllers and that type of stuff. So if you avoid those, you don't really need – you don't have a SATA 6 gigabit per second chipset.
Right.
Or maybe the QX67 does, but you don't really need that performance,
right,
especially on a laptop. Latency is where you get your huge advantages in SSDs. So – that's going to be a benefit in a SATA 3G or SATA 6G
right
SSD.
I mean, the irony here is the company that built the SSD drive that caused your friend so much emotional trauma is actually probably, Intel is like the gold standard for SSD reliability.
Yes.
They're also the gold standard for doing things like really quickly patching firmware, because Intel basically...
they have a lot of enterprise customers.
And Intel's got a big ego, and I mean that in the best possible way, in the sense that Intel's going to be spending money to make sure things run right for an extended period of time. And I don't want to say any smaller vendors may have issues with that, but generally speaking, the smaller a company is, usually the less you pay for their product, and
right,
the less likely you are to still be able to get firmware updates and patches on that later on. I don't expect any SSDs that are running fine now to need a patch in 3 years, however.
No.
You know, just to qualify what I'm saying,
sure,
you know, before anybody, because like, you know, Intel, I think, has a big, you know, Intel basically is the gold standard for SSD. I'd say OCZ actually has a pretty stellar rep at this point, although...
Well, see, there's a lot of complaints against their SSDs.
Right.
I was actually having a discussion about this today, but I'm not sure. They're also the kind of the market leader
right
in that area, and that kind of happens. When you sell the most SSDs, you're going to have the most complaints. So, you know, if it's 3-to-1 OCZ to Intel, you know, for the consumer, for the
right
people who watch our show and send us emails and that kind of stuff, then are we seeing three times as many problems, or is it more than that? And that,
right,
that's the issues that we need to address. But obviously, it's not data that these companies are really forthcoming with.
We'd like to talk about our failures with the community.
I would say, buy an SSD. If you want to get an Intel 320, make sure it's got that firmware on it before you install all of your stuff. If you want to get a Vertex, maybe get a Vertex 2 instead of a Vertex 3. Vertex 3s are the ones
right
that use the new SandForce controller that's 6 gigabit per second. Maybe avoid that. But just always back up your data.
Yeah, back up your data. And the other thing is you know, the middle of the road SSD is going to be so mind-numbingly fast. You're going to open up
right
this like gigantic pile of code that usually takes you forever to open up and prepare to make two line changes and then freaking, you know, send to the compiler.
Yeah.
And it's going to open up and you're going to be like, what happened? And because it's shocking how fast, you know, your data is moving on the off of an SSD onto the bus into your you know main system memory and CPU, so that even though you know, like somebody's going to be looking at you, I've got a friend who the new SSD drive comes out, he buys it because
wow
apparently
okay
he's big on the write offs and I don't know how
okay
else to describe it, but and he can basically, I think he has a spreadsheet where he estimates the number of seconds saved per opening per file, and then can basically amortize
wow
out the value of this because he's a freak that way. And
gotta
I
have
ROI
to show the boss.
Yeah, well, he is the boss,
oh,
so he's basically he has to justify his hardware habit to himself. But it's so funny because like, he does it because he has the money and he doesn't mind it. The reality is for anybody going from a standard notebook drive, especially one that's a couple, 3 years old, the new SSD drive is going to be so mind-numbingly fast
that's
by
true
comparison. If you don't have one that's you know, your middle-of-the-road drive, okay, maybe the new super-duper 6, you know, 6-gig one is like 20% faster. You know what I mean? You're not even going to think about that 20%
right
because you've done like 400% performance improvement.
It is, right? And I think... You're right. Moving to any SSD at this point is going to be an advantage.
Right.
So, you know, if you don't want... I keep thinking in the lines of Vertex. They're just the most popular SandForce drive. But, you know, look at Agility, which is kind of like the lower-cost version of that. See what the price differences are. Make some decisions there.
Right.
I think, you know, if you had one, your friend, your coworker was one of the unlucky ones with the Intel 320 8-megabyte bug issue, that's unfortunate. But it has been patched and fixed. So hopefully your coworker kept good backups. And,
right. Always,
you always
back
should
up. Hence my 12 terabytes of hard drive that will be assembled into either a Drobo or this server box
there
later on.
There you go.
In
RAID of some kind.
So when do you get back to Kentucky? And what's coming up on PC Per when you do?
Wow, I don't know. We have a review of some high-end GPUs. GTX 580 Matrix card from ASUS is coming up. We also have... like we were talking about before, the 400 or 500 watt fanless power supply,
yes,
which, you know, fanless, you know, power supply reviews, maybe not always as exciting as it used to be back in the day when it was, oh my gosh, we saw 1,000, oh my gosh, we saw 1,100 and 1,200. I think this fanless unit will get quite a bit of exposure because there are a lot of people, obviously a lot of people that are interested in quiet PCs.
We love you.
Anything interesting on Techzilla HD Nation?
It's kind of funny. We're shooting our show that goes out the day after Labor Day tomorrow because the studio's closed on Labor Day.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, that's not going to be out for 3 weeks. But Pioneer App Radio next week, we're going to actually be doing some more quiet PC stuff on Techzilla.
Cool.
And there's something. Oh, we may actually finally do the bulletproof hard drive. We're going to run over a hard drive with my truck, hopefully while it's moving data on and off of it. So the I.O. Gear ruggedized
impressed.
Hard drive, rugged hard drive, hopefully next week on Techzilla. So
cool.
Yeah, that's either going to be an epic win or an epic fail. It's supposed to be good for 5,000 pounds, which means it should be safe underneath my 6,500-pound truck because you only have a quarter of the weight going to each wheel, right? Yeah,
sure.
This is going to be
sure.
Well, I'll do the benchmark testing before the truck rolls over.
Always do this. Always do the strength testing last.
Yes.
We know we used to get those Corsair USB drives mm-hmm. that were in like the screw metal cases. Always make sure you do the benchmarking before you throw it off a 10-story building or something like that.
I bought one of those, and in the middle of a show, I dropped it into my coffee cup to basically talk about how. Yeah. And somebody cleared the set and threw out the coffee cup with the coffee and the incredibly expensive drive inside of it.
It doesn't protect against that, unfortunately. So,
on that bright and cheerful note, I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Schrell.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.
My makeup person.
You're too pretty for makeup.